Oh, agonized clenches making the last molds of her life in the dark. The black eye opens, the pupil druzed with black hairs stops, the chakra on top of the brain throbs a long moment in world light, and she skids out on her face into light, the speck of stunned flesh clotted with celestial cheesiness, glowing with the astral violet of the underlife. And as they cut her tie to the darkness, she dies a moment, turns blue as a coal, the limbs shaking as the memories rush out of them. And when they hang her up by the feet, she sucks air, screams her first song, and turns rose, the slow beating featherless arms already clutching at the emptiness.
Galway Kinnell reading an excerpt from his poem Under the Maud Moon, which is in his 1982 Pulitzer Prize-winning book Selected Poems, published by Houghton Mifflin. Galway Kinnell will be reading this weekend at the Geraldine R. Dodge Poetry Festival in Stanhope, New Jersey. I'm Christiane Vaillancourt.
For more information about the Poetry Festival, you can call in Pennsylvania 215-546-1510 or in New Jersey 201-359-8845. Christiane Vaillancourt's reports on the arts can be heard each Thursday on Fresh Air around 3:45. WHYY's arts reporting is made possible with a grant from Hunt Manufacturing, a leading manufacturer of arts and craft supplies and office products, the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts, and the Pew Memorial Trust. Right now it's 4 o'clock. This is Fresh Air on WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. I'm Amy Sallet. Terry Gross is down in Washington, D.C. this week and next week co-hosting All Things Considered. You can hear her tonight between 5 and 6:30 right here on 91FM. Tonight on All Things Considered, President Reagan is on his way to Iceland for a meeting with Soviet leader Gorbachev. We'll hear what's been happening at today's pre-summit meeting. Also, Terry Gross will report on a fictional rogue vampire who becomes a modern-day rocker and stalks fame and victims. That's later tonight on NPR's All Things Considered, and that begins at 5 o'clock right here on 91FM. In just a moment, we'll begin a concert with pianist William Bolcom and vocalist Joan Morris. Today, we're broadcasting live from our music studio at 6th and Race Streets. And here with us is a live studio audience, and I really want to thank all of you for coming and joining us today. For 14 years, pianist William Bolcom and mezzo-soprano Joan Morris have been performing popular American songs, from turn-of-the-century ballroom tunes to the works of George Gershwin, Irving Berlin, and Jerome Kern. Joan Morris studied voice and acting. She has performed in opera, music theater, clubs, and cabarets. In an article in the New Yorker magazine, Andrew Porter says of Joan Morris, "Her coloring or placing of a particular word is so enchanting that one needs to hear it again at once. There is something in the way Miss Morris enunciates the single word O in John Flynn's Yip-I-Addy-I-Addy, which is magical." William Bolcom began playing piano at the age of 5, and at age 12 he had composed a string quartet based on the ideas of Stravinsky and Ives. He received a Ph.D. in music from Stanford University. William Bolcom's current compositions draw from Pierre Boulez, Luciano Berio, and Darius Milhaud, with whom he studied, but his work also incorporates popular idioms such as ragtime, jazz, and rock and roll. He recently completed a major 3-hour work based on William Blake's Songs of Innocence and Experience. Bolcom and Morris together travel throughout the United States and Europe, performing popular American song. They have recorded 14 albums. The latest is on MCA Records, and it's entitled Lime Jello and American Cabaret. William Bolcom and Joan Morris are in Philadelphia to perform at the American Music Theater Festival's Late Night Cabaret. They will be appearing each evening through Sunday at the Top of Center Square Club on the 41st floor of the Center Square building, which is at 15th and Market Streets. Performances begin at 10 p.m. For more information about the cabaret, you can call the American Music Theater Festival at 988-9055. And now it's my great pleasure to introduce Joan Morris and William Bolcom.
Thank you. one fellow for me in this world. Harry's his name, that's what I claim. Why, for every fellow there must be a girl. I found my mate by kindness of fate. For I'm just wild about Harry, and Harry's wild about me. The heavenly blisses of his kisses fill me with ecstasy. He's sweet like chocolate candy, and just like honey from the bee. Oh, I'm just wild about Harry, and he's just wild about, cannot do without. He's just wild about me. Oh, I'm just wild about Harry, and Harry's wild about me. The heavenly blisses of his kisses fill me with ecstasy. He's sweet just like chocolate candy, and just like honey from the bee. Oh, I'm just wild about Harry, and he's just wild about, cannot do without. He's just wild about me. Just like chocolate candy, and just like honey from the bee. Oh, I'm just wild about Harry, and he's just wild about, cannot do without. He's just wild about me.
I'm just wild about Harry, but it's a way that many people may not know it because it's the waltz version. UB Blake wanted to write a waltz for that show, Shuffle Along, in 1921, and the star of the show then, Lottie G, and Noble Sissel, his collaborator, said, you can't have a waltz in the black show. So instead of doing that, he put it into a one-step, which is the way everybody knows it. But in his memory and his honor, we have always done it as a waltz. And I think the next thing we're going to be doing is a song by George, and as an English critic once misobserved his lovely wife, Ira Gershwin. And this is a thing called Someone to Watch Over Me.
There's a saying old says that love is blind. Still we're often told, seek and ye shall find. So I'm going to seek a certain lad I've had in mind. Looking everywhere, haven't found him yet. He's the big affair I cannot forget. Only man I ever think of with regret. I'd like to add his initial to my monogram. Tell me, where is the shepherd for this lost lamb? There's a somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that he turns out to be someone to watch over me. I'm a little lamb who's lost in the wood. I know I could always be good to one who watch over me. Although he may not be the man some girls think of as handsome, to my heart he carries the key. won't you tell him, please, to put on some speed? Follow my lead. Oh, how I need someone to watch over me. Although he may not be the man some girls think of as handsome, to my heart he carries the key. Won't you tell him all my love I will save? I'll be his slave. Oh, how I crave someone to watch over me.
People always remember that P.G. Wodehouse was the author of the Jeeves novels and all the things with Bertie Wooster and Jeeves in them and so on, and the Smith novels with a P in front, but they don't realize that he also was a wonderful lyricist. In fact, in the teen years of the century, he did many shows with Jerome Kern and a man named Guy Bolton. These were put on in a very small theater called the Prince's Theater in New York, of about 300 seats, and an orchestra of about 15 or 20. And they were quite famous because they had plots in which the songs were integrated, and this was really a novelty in those days. So this one is actually from one called Leave It to Jane, a show called Leave It to Jane, and the song is called Cleopatra, words by P.G. Wodehouse and music by Jerome Kern.
In days of old, beside the Nile, a famous queen there dwelt. Her clothes were few, but full of style, her figure slim and svelte. On every man that wandered by, she pulled the theater-bearer eye. And everyone observed with awe that her work was swift but never raw. I'd be like Cleopatra if I could have my way. Each man she met, she went and kissed, and she dozens on her waiting list. I wish that I had lived there beside the pyramid. For a girl today don't get the scope that Cleopatra did. As girls will do of Bill or Jack or Jim, the time had come, his friends all knew, to say goodbye to him. She couldn't stand by any means reproachful, stormy farewell scenes. To such coarse stuff she would not stoop, so she just put poison in his soup. When out with Cleopatra, men always made their wills. They knew there was no time to waste when the gumbo had that funny taste. They'd take her hand and squeeze it. They'd murmur, "Oh, you kid." But they never liked to start to feed till Cleopatra did. She danced new dances now and then, the sort that make you blush. Each time she did them, scores of men got injured in the rush. They'd stand there gaping in a line and watch her agitate her spine. It simply used to knock them flat when she went like this and then like that. Dancing Cleopatra was always on the spot. She gave these poor Egyptian ginks something else to watch beside the Sphinx. Mark Antony admitted that what first made him skid was the wibbly wobbly wiggly dance that Cleopatra did.
Jerome Kern, of course, would go on and work with many different lyricists during his composing life, and one of them was B.G. de Silva, who was probably better remembered by those who know the 20s musicals as part of the team of de Silva, Brown, and Henderson, who were the people who probably wrote the most 20s-ish type of songs, things like The Best Things in Life Are Free, Button Up Your Overcoat, Bye-Bye Blackbird, and so on. But he did work with lots of other people, including George Gershwin, but this next one is a Kern de Silva song. They all knew each other. I've seen pictures of them sort of in group photographs. Many of them even went to the same school, so it was really a kind of a feeling of class of 1920 hitting the musical stage. And this next song is from a collaboration of de Silva and Kern. It's called Look for the Silver Lining.
If I preach to you a while, tears are out of place in eyes that were meant to smile. There's a way to make your very biggest trouble small. Here's the happy secret of it all. Look for the silver lining. Whene'er a cloud appears in the blue, remember somewhere the sun is shining, and so the right thing to do is make it shine for you. A heart full of joy and gladness will always banish sadness and strife. So always look for the silver lining and try to find the sunny side of life. Somewhere the sun is shining, and so the right thing to do is make it shine for you. A heart full of joy and gladness will always banish sadness and strife. So look for the silver lining and try to find the sunny side of life.
Kay Swift is a very active, lovely lady who was a very close friend of George Gershwin. They nearly got married. And she herself is also a composer. She wrote Fine and Dandy, without which the entire quiz program industry would be enormously impoverished, you know. And ladies and gentlemen, now you want to have the $50,000, exactly, $50,000. And but she also wrote some wonderful other music, and including her chamber music, and fine composer, and a wonderful lady. And she also wrote this next song with one of her several husbands, who was actually James Warburg of the Warburgs, and his pen name for this one is Paul James, and it's called Can't We Be Friends?
I'd found the man of my dreams. Now it seems this is how the story ends. He's going to turn me down and say, can't we be friends? I thought for once it couldn't go wrong. Not for long, I can see the way this ends. He's going to turn me down and say, can't we be friends? Never again, through with love, through with men. They play their game without shame, and who's to blame? I thought I'd found a man I could trust. What a bust! This is how the story ends. He's going to turn me down and say, can't we be friends? I took each word he said as gospel truth, the way a silly little child would. I can't excuse it on the grounds of youth. I was no baby in the wild wood. He didn't mean it. I should have seen it. Now it's too late. I thought I knew the wheat from the chaff. What a laugh. This is how the story ends. I let him turn me down and say, can't we be friends? I acted like a kid out of school. What a fool! Now I see the way this ends. I let him turn me down and say, can't we be friends? Why should I care? Though he gave me the air, why should I cry, heave a sigh, and wonder why? I should have seen the signal to stop. What a flop! This is how the story ends. I let him turn me down and say, can't we be friends?
We're going to end our first section here with a song by Harry Woods called When the Red, Red Robin Goes Bub, Bub, Bubbin' Along.
I heard a robin this morning. I'm feeling happy today. Going to pack my cares in a whistle and blow them all away. What if I've been unlucky? Really haven't a thing. There's a time I always feel happy as a king. When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he starts throbbing his old sweet song. Wake up, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up, get up, get out of bed, cheer up, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin comes a bob, bob, bobbing along. Oh, where is he? Do you see him? I know he's up there somewhere. Gee. Why, you little... wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, cheer up. cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I've been blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Now rain may glisten, but still I'm gonna listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. Ah, when the red, red robin comes a bob, bob, bobbing along.
That's William Bolcom on piano and Joan Morris on vocals. You were both trained as, quote, serious musicians in the classical tradition. Why have you chosen to sing American popular song? And either one of you can jump in.
Well, these, of course, are our classical music, you know, in a strange way. People go to Lieder concerts in Germany and they understand all the words. And at least they should, and they are very unhappy if they don't. And I think that we have gone to Lieder concerts, and since we didn't understand the words, we figured they must be better than us, and we sat there sort of feeling somewhat overwhelmed. But, you know, there's no reason to feel that way. I mean, they make sense to them, and our songs make sense to us. That doesn't automatically make them not classical. I think that there are a lot of times you have to deal with schools and the schools of thought, which have thought up until recently that they weren't valid, but maybe we've made some inroad toward that.
Mm-hmm. You obviously believe that the appeal of this music is not just nostalgia. What would you say is the enduring value of it?
Well, they express eternal human emotions. I mean, just like art songs do. You know, your guy left you, or gee, it's raining and I had a new dress and I wanted to show it. You know, I mean, if you look at some of the Lieder songs, they're about things like that too, or the sadness of life. You know, the incomprehensibility of it all. That's what a song is supposed to do. If it can get across in 3 or 4 minutes a whole little experience, that's all you can. As Charles Ives said, thus must a song always be a song. I never quite understood that, but
interesting notion anyway.
Yeah. I don't think profoundness. I don't think it's the language it's written in, or the, I don't think there's anything that makes a thing profound. I think it's how it makes you feel and what you can put into the song.
Because you understand it doesn't make it automatically not profound.
Or profound.
Or the other way around, exactly. Mm-hmm. It has something more to do with whether it's true or not, and I think we picked and we've tried to pick always the ones that made sense to us. We've gone through a whole history of songs, and I think one of the reasons we don't do some of the things that are current is because other people are covering them very well. They don't need us. What we're doing, I think, is trying to put together a link, I guess, between our own American and special past, which turned out to be universal. One of the things that was a great surprise to us was wherever we perform in Europe, it's the same darn thing, isn't it?
Oh, people. You see, people in the audience, this has happened to us in Germany and in France. They mouth the words to the songs as you're doing them, especially somebody like Gershwin. He's absolutely, they really are considered our leader, if you will. You know, they're the ones that are loved and known in many countries all over the world.
Yeah.
So the response, if you go to Europe, the response is widespread. People understand and
they
appreciate.
They do. They don't necessarily always understand English when you talk with them, but they know the songs by heart. It's curious that recently I was with the National Endowment for the Arts on one of those things where you judge things, and in comes the USIA asking. The Chinese government had just made a request and had tried several times to bring people over to sing just this kind of song. The Chinese want to hear them too. So there, I mean, it's an enormous kind of universal kind of music. We probably didn't realize that. And it's the first thing we think of sort of, well, it can't be any good because they're so familiar, but they really are and quite loved. So that's one of the things I think we've found was true about our whole experience, and that I think we wanted somehow to try to let people know that they weren't something they have any reason to be ashamed of. And that was our first battle, was to say, yes, it's perfectly all right to like what you've loved all your life. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think, pretty well. I think by now I can say that we've more or less, well, amongst many other people, have begun to try to do something about it. Yet we don't want to be overwhelmingly reverent. I think that can be an awful mistake. People
no,
sit there and
yeah.
revering it all over the place, and we all sit there feeling as if, that's sort of uptight making. At least it is to me.
Great art.
Yes.
Well, it may be that, but I don't think that attitude of reverence, even to art, should be that way. one time we had the good fortune to meet William Saroyan through some friends of ours, and we were all over in Paris at the same time. We had a wonderful dinner, and one of the last things he said to us was, "Art is what is irresistible." And that sort of gives you, you know, whether it's something by Schubert or Brahms or Gershwin or Harry
or Billy
von Tinsen,
Joel or whoever. Yeah. I mean, it could be anybody. And if it's irresistible, maybe it's art, you know. I don't know. Otherwise,
because that's what people need, you know. If it's something that at that moment it answers something you know, if it gives you a moment of sympathy or something to laugh at, you know. I mean, that's what we are. Studs Terkel says what separates man from the other animals is that we're creatures that tell stories. And that, to me, every song has a story that you want to convey to people, whether something in your experience or a real little story.
Joan, many of these songs are humorous. Is there a trick in how you impart humor in singing? I guess you try to not overdo it.
Yes, my secret is. No.
Well, there are a couple things you don't do, and one of them is have it's one thing to have yourself all over the place and just think, oh boy, isn't this fun, and not share it with the audience. Another one is to make it clear so that they can enjoy it. And you have to, I think it's a sort of a kind of restraint you show. I mean, it's like a really good joke teller doesn't laugh at the punchline before the punchline, because by that time you're so exhausted, and so is he, that the punchline is lost. So you very quietly, in a nice deadpan kind of way, tell the story, and you make it as clearly as possible. And then as a person laughs, you notice, as often as not, a really good comic will usually not laugh. It's not because they aren't enjoying the joke. It's because they're sitting there watching and listening to the laugh, because they're going to go on with the next story. So it's just kind of an art you learn. But I don't think anybody can put it up and do any kind of set of rules. Point one, do this. Point two, do that. I think one thing is true is that Jan de Gattani once had a lesson with her teacher, Sergius Kagan, and there was a very moving song that she was singing, and Jan's tears started coming up in her eyes, and Sergius Kagan punched her in the stomach. And it was a horrible thing to do. And he said, if you feel it so much, they aren't going to have a chance. You've got to. In other words, when you're going through all these emotions, you'll feel them, and you'll feel a terribly sad song, and it'll be all teared up, and you have to get over all of that before you perform it for somebody else. Otherwise, they don't get to share it. That's about the only rule I can think of.
Well, it's there. The emotion is there, but you control. I mean, that's what art is about, you know, that you are in control when you do it.
I suppose that's probably it. Next question.
Many of these songs have been recorded many times by many different people. When you sit down to bring together your arrangement, do you somehow try to get back to distill the composer's original intention? How do you do that?
Well, I think one of the things that started it off in this whole kind of tack was a kind of curious history that started this whole business for us. Neither one of us really planned on doing this particular sort of thing. It just sort of happened. I mean, our whole career, if it can be called that, was something we sort of fell into. And it came because probably the first request we had to work together was for the American Musicological Society, of all people, who said, we have finally decided we would like to look at American musical theater seriously. As I always say, after having despoiled and laid waste the Renaissance and the Baroque, they're finally working on American musical theater. And very kindly taken by, I'm sure, by musicologists. But the point is, I guess they wanted to hear the material. And besides, a lot of people have done things to these songs which are wonderful and memorable. But I suppose we wanted to let you know how they went.
And oftentimes looking at a piece of music, I'd see a change that, you know, in performance tradition, an ending had been changed, and the original was maybe just a little bit different. Sometimes performance...
Famous cases, of course, I could cry salty tears.
Where have I been all these years? Little while.
Here's Frank Sinatra's version.
Tell me now, how long has this been going on?
Oh, he does that every time?
He does that every time. And the way it's really written is...
How long has this been going on?
Which is also nice, you know. And that's the way that George Gershwin wrote it. Now, who's right? I don't know. You can have it both ways. But with our recording, you'll hear it the way it was on the paper. I don't know. I don't think that's the only way.
No, but that was interesting to me. And also the fact when we did the earlier songs, the 90 songs, the verses, I had always, you know, when you're on the bus on the way to the game, everybody sings the chorus to Wait Till the Sun Shines, Nellie, or You Are My Sunshine or something. And I had never heard most of the verses of these. It was a whole new world. All of a sudden, the story sets up the song and tells you why the person was saying that thing. I really had fun finding those.
Okay, so now let's listen to some more music from William Bolcom and Joan Morris.
I'm going to play two tangos by the Brazilian composer who lived all his life in Rio de Janeiro. His name was Ernesto Nazaré, which was spelled like Nazareth. And he wrote many, many, many pieces, somewhere close to 800 as far as we know. I've only seen maybe 50 or 60 of the tangos and waltzes and other pieces he wrote, but they're absolutely wonderful. Some have been recorded by a fine pianist named Artur Moreira Lima, and I will play two of them as pieces that perhaps have not been known by many people in the public. I've just gotten to know them. The reason I had some interest in them is because my teacher, Darius Mio, who spent some time down around the First World War in Brazil as a cultural attaché, got very interested in Nazaré and used many of the tunes of Nazaré in things like Le Boeuf sur le Toit. And here is one by him, and it's called Tenebroso. Again by Nazaré, Escorregando. Mm-hmm. plus a few wrong notes. But after all, this is not the this isn't television. Everything isn't perfect. Anyway, the next songs are going to be with Joni. This next one is a Rodgers and Hart called "Glad to Be Unhappy."
Look at yourself. If you had a sense of humor, you would laugh to beat the band. Look at yourself. Do you still believe the rumor that romance is simply grand? Since you took it right on the chin, you have lost that bright toothpaste grin. My mental state is all a jumble. I sit around and sadly mumble. Fools rush in, so here I am, very glad to be unhappy. I can't win, but here I am, more than glad to be unhappy. Unrequited love's a bore, and I've got it pretty bad. But for someone you adore, it's a pleasure to be sad, like a straying baby lamb, with no mammy and no pappy. I'm so unhappy, but oh, so
again by Rodgers and Hart, "Too Good for the Average Man," introduced by Monty Woolley.
When Russia was white, it was white for the classes and black for the masses. Unfortunate asses, all wealth belonged to few. When England was Tudor, the king and his cronies had cocktails at Tony's, the poor had balonies, and that's how England grew. Sing la and huzzah for the poor folks, as long as the poor folks are your folks. Finer things are for the finer folk since society began. Caviar for peasants is a joke. It's too good for the average man. Supper clubs are for the upper folk, packed like sardines in a can. Through the smoke you get your check and choke. It's too good for the average man. Each poor man has a wife he must stick to. Men of fashion can be cocky. To be caught in flagrante delictu is much too good for the average mocky. All night parties, drinking like a lord, fit into our social plan. Waking in the alcoholic ward is too good for the average man. For the fancy class, since psychiatry began. Neurasthenia isn't for the mass, it's too good for the average man. Rich old age can blossom like the rose, plastic surgeons have a plan. Cutting up your face to spite your nose, it's too good for the average man. Lots of kids for a poor wife are dandy. Girls of fashion can be choosy. Birth control and the modus operandi are much too good for the average floozy. Psychoanalysts are all the whirl. Rich men pay them all they can. Waking up to find that he's a girl is too good for the average man.
The writing team of Bob Cole and James Rosamond and James Weldon Johnson was active around the turn of the century and actually performed for Queen Victoria. This next song is one of the ones, their most famous one, I think, If You Like Me, what's the name of that? We've only
Under
recorded
the bamboo
it.
Tree.
Thank you very much, and I couldn't think of it suddenly. But this one is not terribly well known, and it's called Nobody's Looking But the Owl and the Moon.
1902.
Glistening in the moonlight, honey. The owl is setting high up in the tree. The little stars am twinkling with a soft light, honey. The night seems only just for you and me. Through the trees the breezes am a-sighing, breathing out a sort of lover's croon. There's nobody looking or a-spying, nobody but the owl and the moon. The owl and the moon. The night is balmy, for the month is June. Then, my little honey, honey, come to meet me soon. While nobody's looking but the owl and the moon. But the owl and the moon. I feel so kind of lonely all the daytime, honey. It seems I really don't know what to do. I just keep sort of longing for the nighttime, honey. 'Cause then I knows that I will be with you. And the thought just sets my brain a-swaying, and my heart a-beating to a tune. Come the owl won't tell what we's a-saying, and course you know we can trust the moon. No. And the moon, the night is balmy, for the month is June. Then, my little honey, honey, come to meet me soon, while nobody's looking but the owl and the moon. But the owl and the moon.
We're going to end our whole show today with a song by Harry von Tilzer, And I think it was their very favorite song of their whole writing career, Tilzer and the various people he worked with. And it's called...
Wait Till the Sun Shines, Nellie.
On a Sunday morn sat a maid forlorn with her sweetheart by her side. Through the window pane she looked at the rain. We must stay home, Joe, she cried. There's a picnic too at the old Point View. It's a shame it rained today. Then the boy drew near, kissed away each tear, and she heard him softly say, wait till the sun shines, Nellie, when the clouds go drifting by. We will be happy, Nellie, don't you sigh. Down Lover's Lane we'll wander, sweethearts, you and I. Wait till the sun shines, Nellie, by and by. For a trolley ride, just to show my brand new gown. Then she gazed on high with a gladsome cry, for the sun came shining down. And she looked so sweet on the big front seat as the car sped on its way. And she whispered low, say, you're all right, Joe. You just won my heart today. Wait till the sun shines, Nellie, when the clouds go drifting by. We will be happy, Nellie, don't you sigh. Down Lover's Lane we'll wander, sweethearts, you and I. Wait till the sun shines, Nellie, by and by.
That's William Bolcom on piano and Joan Morris vocals. Thank you so much for coming and performing today. It sounded wonderful. It was really a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Bolcom and Morris are in town to play at the Late Night Cabaret, which is part of the American Music Theater Festival. They'll be there tonight through Saturday. Performances begin at 10 p.m.
10:30.
Oops. Well, you should be there at 10 p.m. to get yourself a good seat up front.
You've got to fix that video prompter.
That's right. Absolutely. And get your good clapping hands ready, please, so those of you who are showing up, because we need lots and lots of support.
Right. And that is at the top of the Center Square building, and it's on the 41st floor, and you can get a really beautiful view of Philadelphia from there. And that's at 15th and Market Streets. For more information about the cabaret, you can call the American Music Theater Festival at 988-9055. William Bolcom and Joan Morris have 14 records of American popular song. Among them are albums of the music of Irving Berlin, Jerome Kern, and George Gershwin, also some of William Bolcom's own compositions, and their most recent is called Lime Jello, and it is on RCA Records. I want to thank you so much for coming to perform, and I want to thank our studio audience for coming and participating in the concert today.
You know, I have the funniest feeling that number is 988-9050.
Oh, no.
It's not. It's
90055. 9050 will get you there, and 9055
is
the one they want to answer
call
the
them
questions
today
on.
Yeah, that's right.
They've
well,
got a lot of phones there.
All right.
Okay, well, it's a good thing, because they need everyone. Yes.
Inclusive.
Today's concert was produced by Danny Miller. The engineer was Joyce Lieberman. Production assistance from Suzanne Neal. I'm Amy Sallet. Funds for the concert were provided by the Philadelphia Foundation. And I would like to give very special thanks to the American Music Theater Festival for their help in making today's performance possible. In just a few minutes, we'll be joining National Public Radio for tonight's edition of All Things Considered with co-hosts Noah Adams and Terry Gross. But I'll tell you what's coming up on Fresh Air after this word from Shadow Traffic.
On the Schuylkill eastbound, a 30-minute delay between Glenwood and the Roosevelt Boulevard. Westbound, 30 minutes in traffic between Montgomery and City. North on 95, a minor delay approaching the Ben Franklin Bridge into New Jersey. Slow at the Walt Whippet and the Ben Franklin tolls. And Cherry Hill, 70 westbound, slow for a half mile approaching Springdale Road. That's shadow traffic, and I'm John Butterworth on 91 FM, WHYY.
Sounds, you were all so good, I couldn't believe it. I didn't hear a sniff
we're
or a cough.
Back on the air. That shadow traffic report was funded by the Philadelphia Business Journal. Tomorrow on Fresh Air at 3 o'clock, our guest will be Josh Myrowitz. He's the author of No Sense of Place, which is a book about some of the effects of the electronic media on our lives. At 4 o'clock, Danny Miller will speak with Anne Rice, who is the author of The Vampire Lestat. It's a novel based on the lore and legend surrounding vampires. On the Best of Fresh Air, Sunday at 6 o'clock, Terry Gross's guest will be broadcast journalist Linda Ellerby, and that's Sunday at 6 o'clock. The engineers for today's edition of Fresh Air were Audrey Vilblaitis and Ron Barron. Fresh Air's assistant producer is Marty Moss-Cohen. Production assistants from Bob Carlin. Danny Miller co-produces the show. For Terry Gross, my name is Amy Sallet. And I would like you to stay tuned for All Things Considered, which will be coming up next. Thanks for listening, and a very special thanks to our guests today, William Bolcom and Joan Morris. This is WHYY-FM in Philadelphia.
Fresh Air was funded in part today by a grant from Eichler & Moffley Realtors with offices in Chestnut Hill, Bluebell, and Doylestown. Eichler & Moffley Realtors, bringing buyers and sellers together for more than 25 years. And English Greenhouse Products Corporation, designers and manufacturers of greenhouses, glass structures, and solariums for architecture, industry, and the home. English Greenhouse is proud to support Fresh Air and the free exchange of ideas.
Good evening. From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm Terry Gross.
And this is Noah Adams with All Things Considered.
These people were referred to only as the customer. Most of these people were CIA agents.
In Managua, captured American Eugene Hassenfuss, the survivor of a downed plane, tells reporters he flies missions for the CIA. The story tonight on All Things Considered.
Also tonight, the Contra supply plane had a colorful past. Outfitted with secret cameras, it once flew a drug sting operation in Nicaragua.
Congress convicts Judge Harry Claiborne in his impeachment trial.
Anti-gay violence, the subject of congressional hearings.
Mississippi River floodwaters crest. Over 7,000 people evacuate North St. Louis.
That and more coming up on All Things Considered. Now we have this hour's news.
I'm Frank Stachow. The Senate today convicted federal Judge Harry Claiborne in the first such proceeding in half a century. Claiborne was found guilty 2 years ago by a federal jury of willfully filing false income tax returns and sentenced to jail term, but he refused to relinquish his seat on the bench. The Senate found Claiborne guilty of high crimes and misdemeanors and ordered him immediately removed from office. An American flyer captured in Nicaragua told reporters today that his missions to aid Contra rebels were directed by CIA agents. Eugene Hoffenfuss said that he flew 10 such missions, each out of a Salvadoran Air Force base and each directed by Cuban-American CIA operatives. The plane on which he and three others were flying was shot down last weekend by Sandinista forces. The other three crew members were killed. At this hour, Nicaragua is scheduled to turn over the bodies of two of the flyers to U.S. authorities. President Reagan was greeted by the Prime Minister on his arrival in Iceland this evening. Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev arrives for this weekend's meeting tomorrow. We have a report from NPR's Neil Conan in Reykjavik.
Officials from both sides are still optimistic about this weekend's meeting, though both delegations are also being careful to play down hopes of a breakthrough here. Earlier today, Soviet Central Committee spokesman Nikolai Shishlin told reporters that Moscow sees this working meeting as preparatory.
I believe that the major objective of the meeting in Reykjavik is to turn on green light for a full-scale summit meeting. At the same time, Reykjavik is a moment of truth.
The arrival of American officials tonight broke a two-day Soviet monopoly on the public relations front here. While Soviet officials were briefing the increasing number of reporters from around the world, senior American spokesmen were not available, and no briefings for the international press are scheduled until late tomorrow. I'm Neil Conan, National Public Radio, in Reykjavik, Iceland.
A new survey released today by the government shows that the abuse of most drugs either leveled off or declined between 1982 and 1985. The study found that the public is more alarmed than ever about the use of illegal drugs. Health and Human Services Secretary Otis Bowen said the results indicate that while drug problems persist in this country, the real dangers of drug abuse are finally being realized by the general public. The Missouri River is receding and the Mississippi is expected to crest this evening, but flooding remains a very serious problem in an area of Missouri just north of St. Louis. Jim Dryden reports.
The Coast Guard is concentrating assistance efforts on the towns of Portage du Sault and West Alton, about 15 miles north of St. Louis. West Alton is completely underwater and Portage du Sault is completely surrounded by water. More than 7,000 people have been forced from their homes by the flooding, but 50 or so people remain in West Alton, electing to wait out the floodwaters. One of those already evacuated, Leo Skrobitz, says he can't understand why anyone would stay in the flooded areas.
There's some hardheads. They'll stay to the bitter end, very end. Sometimes they're more or less forced to get out.
Those people who have evacuated can expect to be away from home for quite a while. Emergency officials project it will be several weeks before most of the flooded areas are cleared of water. For National Public Radio, I'm Jim Dryden in St. Louis.
South Africa today outlawed foreign funding for the nation's largest anti-apartheid group. The United Democratic Front has some 2 million members, and organization officials say much of their money comes from foreign contributions. Game 2 of the National League playoffs gets underway tonight in Houston. The New York Mets will try to even the series tonight after losing to the Houston Astros last night 1-0. Nolan Ryan will be on the mound for the Astros. Bob Ojeda will start for the Mets. This is National Public Radio News in Washington. Profit takers dominated today's session on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 7 points to close at 1796.82. Trading was moderate, with more than 153 million shares changing hands. The average price of a share on the New York Exchange lost 11 cents. Sales at retail department stores picked up a bit in September, but not enough to convince most analysts that consumer spending is on the rebound. Sears Roebuck, the nation's largest retailer, announced a 0.7% increase in September sales. The number two retailer, Kmart, reported 8.2% rise in last month's sales, and the JCPenney company posted a 5.7% September sales increase. Analysts say strong back-to-school buying in the first half of the month and widespread price reductions